plucked her tongue. About that, Joshua. It's true that you've had a terrible time with tornadoes, and losing your fiancé and her daughter was truly a tragedy. But I do believe you are wrong in the way you think about luck. You've certainly brought a positive energy with you to Eternity Springs. Why, Brick might have lost everything if you hadn't been sharp enough to realize that Courtney was stealing from him. Josh turned his focus to the motorcycle spark plugs. That's different, Celeste. Is it? I have something I want you to think about. He braced himself, instinctively knowing he wouldn't like hearing what she had to say. Open your mind to the idea that much of what you've perceived as bad luck is actually good luck that simply hasn't manifested itself as of yet. Oh, well, that wasn't hard because it was nonsense. It takes a little faith, Joshua. It takes some imagination. But I want you to consider the idea that the most recent tornado that destroyed your business and home might have been the luckiest event of your life. He couldn't hold back his bitter laugh. I'm sorry, Celeste. That's a little too far into woo-woo land. Open your mind, she repeated. You wouldn't have come to Eternity Springs if not for that storm. That's already proven to be a lucky happenstance for Brick. Who knows whose life you'll affect next? Why, it could easily have been me. If you hadn't opened your shop, then I'd have ridden my motorcycle to South Fork to have it worked on. I might have been caught in a sudden freak snowstorm at the top of Sinner's Prayer Pass. So there you go. You've probably saved my life today. He couldn't help but laugh. Your mind is an amazing thing, Celeste. She crossed to his workbench where her carburetor and spark plugs now sat and placed her hand on his arm. You are a good man, Joshua. You have a good heart. You're building a new life in Eternity Springs that has the potential to be something wonderful. If only you will allow it. Josh didn't know why a lump suddenly formed in his throat. Now, I should have just enough time to walk over to Heaven Sense to be on time for my meeting with Savannah. I'll tell her you're joining us for Thanksgiving. And don't forget to mark the Fall Festival planning meeting on your calendar. I'll pick up my Goldwing before you close this afternoon. See you later, dear. He could do nothing more than reply, See you later, Celeste. She'd been gone no more than a minute when he saw she'd left behind a notebook with a pattern of angel's wings on the cover. Bet she'll need that, he murmured. He picked the notebook up and walked out of the work bay. Celeste was just beyond Caitlin's gingerbread house and striding rapidly away. He called out to her and broke into a jog. She turned around and he held the notebook up. You forgot this. Oh, heavens, I'd forget my head if it wasn't attached. Thank you. No problem. He caught up with her and handed over the notebook. Then he took two steps back toward his shop and paused. Celeste? Yes? Thank you. For keeping quiet about, well, you know, and for the Thanksgiving invitation, and for, well, he waved his hand around. Everything. Her eyes sparkled. You are quite welcome. Promise me you'll think about what I said. Yes, ma'am. He started back toward the shop, slipping his hands into the front pocket of his sweatshirt to keep them warm. Walking past Gingerbread House, he could hear the sound of a skill saw and the pounding of hammers. Caitlin's renovations were coming right along. She told him last night that Jax had told her they were running ahead of schedule. He'd hoped to be finished by the 1st of February. She'd tentatively set her grand opening for the 1st of March. Josh thought it would be nice to have kids playing in the yard next spring and summer. He glanced toward Harriet's house. She'd sure like it. Bet she'd sit on her front porch watching them all the time, if she wasn't off camping by then. He'd noticed the Tornado Alley Cats membership application lying on her counter the last time he was in her kitchen. Back inside the garage, Josh went into his stockroom to check his supply of spark plugs, making sure he had what Celeste needed. He was distracted as he did so, but he didn't know by what. Something bothered him, niggled at his consciousness. He removed a box of plugs from his stock shelves and re-entered the work bay. What was wrong? He set down the box and walked back outside. Had he noticed something odd at Gingerbread House? Or maybe at Harriet's? He eyed his neighbor's house. Her newspaper wasn't in her yard. The flyers that had arrived in today's mail weren't sticking out of the mailbox on her porch. Nothing wrong there. Giving in to his instincts, he started up the sidewalk toward Gingerbread House. He'd reached the front walk of his own house when it hit him. Her bird feeder. Harriet's bird feeder was empty. She filled her bird feeder up like clockwork after she brought in the mail each day. Letting it remain empty wasn't like her at all. Josh changed direction and crossed the street. He climbed her porch steps and knocked on the door. Harriet? She didn't respond. He knocked again. Harriet, are you home? Was that a sound coming from inside? Damn. He had a really bad feeling about this. He tried the doorknob. Unlocked. Opening the door, he stepped inside. Harriet? Then he heard her. Her voice weak and thready.
Josh? Oh, thank God. Josh?
He rushed toward the sound and found Harriet Rosenbaum lying on her kitchen floor. Streaks of tears stained her cheeks.
I can't get up. It's my hip. I'm afraid it's my hip. Help me, Josh.
I will. I'm here. Hold on, Harriet. I'm going to call the paramedics. Except he didn't have his phone with him. Do you have a landline or just your cell?
Just a cell. It's in the living room, beside my chair.
Okay, I'll get it. Hold on, Harriet. We'll have help for you in just a few minutes.
Thank you. Oh, thank you, Josh. God bless you. The day you moved across the street from me was my lucky day.
Autumn faded to winter, and in the valley that nestled Eternity Springs, 2 inches of snow fell on Thanksgiving Day. Caitlin spent a lovely day with her family, though she wished circumstances had been such that Josh could have shared the day with them. Next year, she told herself. Renovations on Gingerbread House continued to progress well. She settled into a routine where she worked from home in the mornings, then wandered over there in the afternoon, and spent a few hours tackling whatever jobs Jack Lancaster deemed appropriate for her. Her sense of accomplishment and pride of ownership built every time she swung a hammer. Her attachment to the mechanic next door continued to grow, too. Mid-afternoon, on the first Saturday in December, she sat on a workbench in his garage with Penny in her lap. Idly, Caitlin scratched the doxy behind her ears and watched Josh's shirt pull tight across his shoulders as he reached above him to do something to the muffler of the car on the lift. She clucked her tongue and observed, "I do like a man in flannel." "You like me out of my flannel better," he replied. "True that." With temperatures hovering in the 20s, Josh had his bay doors closed, even though he was open for business until 3. Caitlin had tried to talk him into closing a little early, but the man was infuriatingly responsible. He closed at 3, so he'd stay open until 3 on the dot, working until 3 on the dot. Penny started squirming, so Caitlin scooted off the workbench, carried the dog over to her wheelchair, and fitted her into it. Penny rolled over to her bed, burrowed her long red nose into her pillow, and closed her eyes. Caitlin wandered back toward the workbench. She picked up a ratchet and twirled it around, liking the clicking noise it made. It reminded her of working with her grandfather in his shop. Without looking away from the muffler, Josh slipped his wrench into his tool chest and withdrew another smaller one. "You should wear a leather tool belt, like Jax does."
"Mechanics don't wear tool belts."
"Why not?"
"We just don't."
"Well, you should. Tool belts are sexy." That distracted him long enough to arch a brow in her direction.
"You shouldn't be ogling Jax Lancaster's ass. He's married."
"Don't be sexist, Tarkington.
I've noticed you looking at Claire's butt. I can't help it, the tool belts make me hot. If I give you one, will you wear it for me? A smile flirted at the corners of his mouth.
Maybe. Without pants? If you promise to hold my hammer.
Caitlin laughed. She was so gone over this man. How is Harriet doing?
Good. I stopped by to see her yesterday. She thinks she'll be sent home from rehab next week.
That's good. I know she's ready to come home. Is her son going to stay with her?
No, he's got to get back to work. He's hired a live-in nurse for her.
She's going to hate that.
Yep. But she knows she's lucky. The break could have been so much worse.
Caitlin set down the ratchet and picked up his socket set. She lifted a 3/8-inch deep socket from its slot and peered through it like a telescope toward the clock on the wall.
3:05, Tarkington. Time to start putting away your tools, don't you think? If you'll stop playing with them, maybe I'll do just that.
He gave the wrench one last twist, then stepped out from beneath the car. He wiped his hands on a shop rag and flipped the lift switch to lower the car. Caitlin replaced the socket and jumped down to the ground.
I had to keep my hands busy. What I wanted to play with wasn't available.
Josh grinned and pulled her into his arms, saying, "Come here." He kissed her hello for a long, lovely minute.
Yep, over the moon gone for him.
So what's on our agenda? He asked, then immediately clarified.
As in, where are we watching football? Your place, mine, Murphy's.
Football?
It's conference championship Saturday. If we go to your house, maybe you can bake us some cookies.
Aren't you afraid my mom will drop by? Caitlin asked dryly.
Good point. I can make a quick run by the trading post and pick up some eggs. I think I have plenty of everything else you'll need.
She gave an exaggerated, aggrieved sigh.
Oh, all right. Only because you said my sugar cookies are better than Harriet's.
Hey, I know which side of my cookie is iced.
Josh gave her one more quick kiss, then released her to begin tidying up his already tidy shop.
Tell you what, I have eggs at home. I'll run by there and grab the eggs and pick up the dress I'm wearing tonight. I can get ready at your place.
In the process of stowing items into his toolbox, Josh paused a moment.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about the deal tonight.
The very absence of an expression told Caitlin just how unhappy he was about tonight's event at the Yellow Kitchen. She couldn't blame him. She wasn't happy about having to attend the dinner party either, but honestly, it was his own fault. She'd been ready to bring him as her date.
They'd argued about it, but he'd been resolute in his refusal. He didn't think that the celebration dinner welcoming Boone McBride to Eternity Springs and her father's law practice was the right time and place to take their relationship that wasn't one public.
It'd be waving a red flag at a bull, Kate, he told her. If we decide to go public, then let's do it at a time and place when escape is possible.
So tonight, she was going solo to her father's big event, which made Mac happy as a clam. He hadn't tried to hide his hope that she and Boone would hit it off. Josh, on the other hand, seemed more aggravated by her father than normal.
Serves you right, Josh Tarkington.
This friend affair of theirs wasn't going to last forever. Either he'd have to finally admit that their relationship was a relationship, or...
Well, she didn't want to think about or. Not yet. Not until after Christmas.
I'll meet you back at your place, then?
Sure.
He still wore a scowl. Caitlin decided to leave him in a better mood.
Do you have butter?
Sure enough. The reminder of the promise of fresh-baked cookies cheered him up.
I have some, maybe one stick. How much do you need?
Don't worry, I'll bring it. She gave him a quick kiss, then said,
See you in half an hour.
I'll preheat the oven.
She paused at the door and gave him a saucy look. Darling, my oven always stays heated around you. Journal entry.
Put a toe tag on me and leave me the hell alone.
My therapist pretended he didn't hear me say it, so I said it again, louder. I meant it, too. I'd rather have a coroner do a Y-cut on me than have that asshat poking around in my head any longer. Therapist, the rapist, kinda apropos, don't you think? Hour after hour. How does that make you feel? What are you feeling? Do you feel like you're making progress? Tell the group about your feelings, and that will be $200 an hour, thank you very much. It's all bull. If they're so smart, they should tell a person what to do. Instead, they ask questions, and we're supposed to do all the work figuring the stuff out. What a crock. And this is supposed to help me how?
Chapter 12. Josh couldn't keep his mind on football. For one thing, the game was boring. Alabama was pounding their opponent. So what else is new? He had a sugar rush going on, because he had way overindulged on Caitlin's cookies. His body was still humming from shower sex, and she was in his bathroom blow-drying her hair so she could go out to dinner with another man. Josh couldn't put his finger on why exactly, but it really chapped his butt. He wasn't worried that she'd actually fall for the lawyer, was he? No, absolutely not. Caitlin wasn't the type to dangle two men on her string at the same time.
So she'll dump me. She'll dump me, and in a month she'll be wearing a rock on her hand, and in June her happy daddy will march her down the aisle, and this time next year she'll be pregnant with twins. No, he muttered aloud. She's not going to do that.
Well, it's not like you didn't tell her that you aren't into marriage and kids. If she does move on to someone who can give her that, then what right do you have to say anything, fool?
He grabbed the remote and started channel surfing. When a familiar black-and-white movie flashed on the screen, Celeste's words reverberated through his mind. You are the spitting image of your great-grandfather.
Was he?
And of course, it was just his luck that Caitlin walked past the media room door right at that moment, wearing nothing but her makeup and one of his fluffy white towels.
Oh, she said, I love this movie. There's a scene coming up where Benjamin Trammell and Grace Kelly stare at each other, and you think the film is going to burst into flames.
Damn. Josh's thumb pressed the remote buttons and returned to football. I'm not a fan of old movies myself. Didn't you say your dad wanted you at the restaurant at 7? You better get moving or you'll be late.
She sighed. You're right.
She disappeared into his bedroom and returned 10 minutes later wearing a little black dress, 3-inch heels, and a strand of pearls.
Josh's stomach sank. You look fantastic.
She made a little curtsy. Thank you.
Nice pearls. From an old boyfriend?
She fingered them, smiled, and gave him the information he wanted. They were my grandmother's, my mother's mom. My grandfather gave them to me.
Mollified, and a little embarrassed by his reaction, Josh stood and walked over to where she stood.
They suit you, and what you're wearing tonight. Understated and classy. Though I think colored jewels would suit you better. Emeralds to match your eyes.
She grinned. Yes, emeralds are the perfect accessory for changing diapers and wiping 3-year-olds' snotty noses. Words formed on the tip of Josh's tongue, asking her to stay, to stand her parents up, to tell Solicitor McBride that she was taken in a relationship. A cheer erupted from the television and halted the dangerous direction of his thoughts.
Alabama wins, Caitlin said. Imagine that.
She opened his front closet and removed her dress coat. Shaken by what he'd almost done, he rose and said,
I'll drive you.
I can walk, Josh. It's 2 blocks.
It's cold. Your toes will have frostbite by the time you get there. I'll take you.
He made his way to the back door in the mudroom and lifted the keys to his truck from their customary hangar. Abandoning her argument, Caitlin followed him to his truck and climbed into the passenger seat. He turned the ignition switch and sat in his drive for a few minutes as the engine warmed up. Caitlin said something about a cookie sheet and the dishwasher and a soap pod, but he barely heard her. Josh was in a stew. He didn't speak as he drove her to her mother's restaurant. He badly wanted to walk her up to the front door and claim her with a public kiss. But better sense prevailed. He pulled up to the curb in a shadowed spot around the corner from the yellow kitchen.
Will you come back to my place afterward?
Probably not. I don't know what time will be done, and I'm sure either Chase or my dad will offer to drop me off at home. She leaned over and kissed his cheek. I'll see you tomorrow. Maybe you could take me up to Stardance River Camp, and we could do some cross-country skiing. I haven't been yet this season, and I know after eating my mother's lasagna, I'll be ready for exercise.
Sure. Whatever.
He pulled away from the curb and turned the corner before she did. He drove past the yellow kitchen, and upon seeing Caitlin's parents and Boone McBride approaching from the opposite direction, he turned into the church parking lot down the street and positioned his truck so he could watch the front door. Parents and daughter greeted each other with a hug. McBride shook Caitlin's hand, but as they started toward the restaurant's entrance, he saw one of Caitlin's shoes slip, and for a moment, she teetered on those high heels. McBride reached out to steady her, setting both hands on her waist. Josh gripped the steering wheel so hard that his knuckles went white. McBride kept one hand at the small of Caitlin's back as he escorted her into the restaurant. Josh sat in his truck, not moving, for at least 10 minutes. He wasn't so clueless that he didn't recognize the emotion burning in his gut like a bad burrito. He was jealous. Pea-green, hard-breathing, jaw-clenching, ready to hit something jealous. He took his foot off the brake, pulled out of the parking lot and onto the street. He drove the perimeter of the 18-block rectangle of Eternity Springs proper. Twice. Then two more times. After making the fifth full circuit, he stopped in front of a house on Aspen between 3rd and 4th. He walked up to the front door and knocked, loudly. Moments later, he heard footsteps approaching the door. It swung open.
Tarkington? Hello, Mr. Whitfield. I'm sorry to bother you this time of night, but I need a favor. A favor? Well, all right. I'm happy to help any way I can. I told you that when you discovered the brake fluid leak in my wife's car last summer. Yes, sir, you did. That's why I'm here. I need you to let me into the bank, into my safety deposit box. All right, the bank manager said. I can do that. When? Tonight, sir. I'd like to go right now.
Caitlin eyed the tiramisu on the dessert plate before her and wondered if she dared take one more bite. While her mother had turned over much of the everyday operation of the Yellow Kitchen to trusted management, she'd been hands-on preparing tonight's celebration meal. The food had been divine, and Caitlin's seams were feeling a little too tight at the moment. She'd enjoyed the evening. She would have enjoyed it more if Josh had been sitting beside her, but the company had been good, the conversation lively and interesting, and her parents had seemed happier and more relaxed than she'd seen them in some time. Dad was almost giddy to have Boone McBride joining his firm. She glanced across the table to see him joking with Lori's dad, Cam, and her mother, Sarah. Perhaps he sensed their gaze, because he glanced her way and, upon meeting her gaze, smiled. It was an easy smile, an honest one. Things had been tense between her and her father since she moved home. He invariably seemed to be pushing her, shoving her, towards settling down and getting married and having 2.3 children. It drove her crazy. Maybe he had a bigger issue with his youngest child turning 30 than she did. Whatever. Though she liked seeing him without a frown line marring his face for a change, maybe he had been working too hard. He was the most responsible man she'd ever met. Maybe trying to balance the travel and his work really was too much for him. Maybe he really did need to retire, but he felt like he needed all his chicks settled first. He was old-fashioned that way, sadly. It was something she'd file away and think about. Later, Boone McBride was speaking to her.
"I think this meal ranks in the top five I've had in my entire life," he said.
"Just the top five?"
"Okay, maybe top three. I can't rank your mom above my own mother's Thanksgiving dinner. That would be just wrong."
"So whose is the third out of the three?" He named a famous restaurant in Napa that was the holy grail for foodies.
"Name dropper?" Caitlin accused.
"You asked."
He shrugged, a grin fluttering on his lips. Caitlin asked him a question about the food and wine pairings at the renowned restaurant. That led to a discussion about California wineries that Caitlin enjoyed, until she caught sight of her father's satisfied expression. She wanted to roll her eyes. "Really, Dad? Could you be a little more obvious?" She did like her father's new partner. He was intelligent and witty and genuinely interesting. Under other circumstances, she might have been attracted to him. But these weren't other circumstances. Josh was in her life. In the past couple of months, he'd become her life. She was head over heels in love with him. And to him, I'm just the friend he's sleeping with. On that depressing note, Caitlin gave in to temptation and speared the last bite of tiramisu. The mood stayed with her as the party broke up. Beneath her father's encouraging stare, Boone asked if he could see her home. Caitlin accepted the ride, deciding this was as good a time as any to apologize for her father's obvious attempt at matchmaking, and let Boone know she was otherwise involved, so he need not feel pressured. The Texan drove a small, sleek BMW sports car, not exactly the ride one needed in a Colorado mountain town, and he mentioned his intention to get something more appropriate.
"Lots to do with a move like this. I didn't realize just how much going into it."
"Having second thoughts?"
"No. I needed to get away from Fort Worth."
His tone didn't invite questions, which of course made her want to ask them. Instead, due to the brevity of the ride home, after she gave him directions to her place, she got to the point. "Boone, this is a little embarrassing. Actually, it's a lot embarrassing. But a person would have to be blind to miss the fact that my dad is trying to set the two of us up. I don't know why he's decided to play matchmaker, but I hope you'll ignore him. I certainly plan to do so."
"Don't be embarrassed, Caitlin. You're a beautiful woman, and under other circumstances, I'd definitely be interested. But I'm not in the market for a relationship right now."
Relief washed through her. Oh, good. That's exactly what I was going to say. Well, except for the woman part. Nothing womanly about you. You're a hot guy. But I'm already with a hot guy. Please don't tell anyone I said so, especially not Dad, and I'm babbling. He laughed.
"I'm glad we're on the same page. I don't need a girlfriend in Eternity Springs, but I can use a friend."
After a second's pause, he repeated,
"I need a friend."
He sounds like he really means it. Adding a bit of perk to her voice, Caitlin said, "Hey, I can do that. I'm a good friend. Ask Josh." On second thought, don't ask Josh. As Boone pulled to a stop in front of her house, Caitlin added, "I'm glad we're simpatico too. So let me say, with total sincerity, welcome to Eternity Springs. I'm happy you're here." The dome light came on as she opened the passenger side door to exit the car. Boone leaned over and kissed her cheek.
"Thank you, friend. I'm glad to be here."
The December night was bitter, and Caitlin hurried toward her front door. She'd neglected to leave a light on when she'd gone to Josh's house earlier, so the room was pitch black when she stepped inside. She was hanging up her coat when his voice came out of the shadows.
"You let him kiss you."
Journal entry.
Rage. As long as I can remember, it's been a beast living inside me. It mostly sleeps, though sometimes it slithers around restless, stirred. That last visit with my dad before he died, after that last backhanded slap, I named him Sherman. Sherman has red eyes that glow in the dark. He has big, pointed yellow teeth. He's hairy, and he stinks, and when I was a kid, he frightened me. As I grew older, he made me feel strong. Feel. How do you feel? How does that make you feel? The rapist. But when Sherman escapes, when he is free, he looks just like my father. Sherman scares me. My new friend makes me forget about him. I call my new friend Charlie. How do I feel? How does Charlie make you feel? Good. Great. Invincible.
Chapter 13. Josh switched on a lamp, and a part of him relished the startled look on her face. From his position beside the window, where he'd watched for her to come home, he said,
"Good thing it was only a kiss on the cheek. I'd hate to have to track him down and whip his ass."
"Excuse me?" Caitlin folded her arms. "Did I invite you here?"
"No, I don't get invited to Timberlake family events."
"I invited you tonight," she muttered. He ignored that.
"Even better, you didn't ask him in for a nightcap. The mood I'm in, I might have killed him."
"Josh..." He crossed the room to her in a few long strides and cut off her words with a kiss filled with fire. He backed her against the wall, knocking down a small framed picture of her family. It clattered to the floor with a satisfying crash. He was rough with her, and she was rough with him right back. He yanked up her dress. She tugged his jeans open. Their tongues battled like swords. He took her there against the wall, jealousy and lust, and some other emotion he was afraid to name, pulsing through his blood. When it was over, when he could breathe again, he picked her up and carried her to her bed. He stripped her naked but for her pearls, and for a long moment, he stared down at her. She gazed up at him, her heart in her eyes. A lump of emotion choked his throat, but he couldn't say the words. He just couldn't. Slowly, Josh removed his own clothes, pulling the necklace from his pocket as he did so. He knelt over her, slipped her pearls from around her neck, and replaced them with his grandmother's necklace. It nestled between her full breasts, the Sokolov emerald pendant, a gift to a great something grandmother from a Grand Duke of Russia a century ago. "There," he murmured. "I've pictured this. Pictured you like this. Lovely and lush, wantonly must, the scent of him clinging to her glistening skin, and his gift nestled between her breasts. You are my dream." Then Josh lowered his head and kissed her, gently this time, sweetly, reverently. He made love to her in a depth and manner he'd never shared with any other woman. Afterward, when they lay silent and spent and satisfied, Caitlin lifted the pendant and studied it. The rectangular emerald was as big as his thumb. Set into an intricate and uniquely styled pendant of white gold, surrounded by diamonds and hanging from a heavy chain. "This is beautiful, Josh." "It suits you." A fierce rush of possessive pleasure washed through him. "I'm surprised you have something like this lying around." She arched her brow and spoke with a hint of starch in her tone. "An old girlfriend's?" He grinned. He liked that she wasn't immune to jealousy either. "No, not an old girlfriend's." He picked up the pendant and thumbed the jewel named Heart of Spring. His voice husky with renewed desire, he said, "I do believe it was made just for you." She smiled sweetly up at him, then sat up and switched on the bedside lamp. She studied the pendant closely. "I love antique jewelry, you've probably noticed. A lot of what I have came to me from my grandmother's sister. She had a ton of costume jewelry. My mom isn't into it, so she gave it all to me. She didn't have anything as spectacular as this, though. Where did you find it? He paused a moment, then spoke the truth. I inherited it from my grandmother. She left it to me, so my father wouldn't get his hands on it. And sell it for pennies on the dollar on one of his lows, or give it away during one of his highs. This is the first time you've mentioned your birth family to me. He regretted it already. It will be the last. They have nothing to do with who I am. She looked like she might pursue it, but at his sharp glance, she took the hint. She tugged the necklace over her head and attempted to hand it back. Thanks for showing it to me. It's a gift. My gift to you.
Oh. Well, thank you, Josh, but I can't accept this. It's a family heirloom.
He took it from her and returned it to where it belonged. I don't have a lot to give you, but this I can do. Accept it graciously, Caitlin. Wear it for me when you're naked. It will give me immeasurable pleasure. To demonstrate the truth of his claim, he made love to her again, drawing it out, indulging himself in the picture she made, lying against her crisp white sheets, with her long blonde hair fanned around her, in the scent of her arousal, in the sounds she made when he brought her to climax again and again and again. Long after she drifted off to sleep, cuddled against him, Josh stared up at the ceiling. He'd done it. He'd thrown sense out of the window. He'd gone and done the one thing he'd sworn he wouldn't do. He was in love with her. He'd fallen in love with her. Stupidly, ridiculously, idiotically in love with her. Passionately in love with her. He loved her. So what now? Could Celeste be right? Dare he take a chance? Could it possibly work between them? The idea hovered at the edge of his dreams like the whisper of an angel's wings. Maybe. 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 Caitlin awoke the following morning, toasty warm from lying beneath her down comforter, and spooned up against her own personal furnace. The man put off heat like the hot springs at Angel's Rest. She liked waking up with Josh Tarkington lying beside her. He slept soundly, his soft, rhythmic breaths blowing softly against her neck. Not wishing to disturb him and enjoying the moment, she remained right where she was. Her thoughts began to whirl. She adored the necklace, but why had he given it to her last night? Christmas was only weeks away. Why didn't he wait until then? Which brought up another concern. Now what in the world was she going to give him for Christmas? Was he one of those people whose love language involved gift-giving? She couldn't tell. This was the first gift he'd given her, and it was pretty wonderful. Would he expect something just as wonderful from her in return? She'd always been one who demonstrated her love through actions. Her gifts were that of time and effort. Baking him cookies yesterday had been a gift to him. Would he recognize that? At least without her having to whack him over the head with it? What can I get him for Christmas? The necklace was breathtaking. She loved it. She truly did, though she wasn't sure where in the world she would wear it. To the trading post to buy paper towels and toilet paper? Why had he given it to her? What was he trying to say to her? Was it simply just a sexual prop? Part of a fantasy of his? Or was he trying to express an emotion he wasn't quite ready to say? The answer was something for which she dared not hope. Had her patience paid off? Was it love? Had Josh fallen in love with her? She shouldn't get ahead of herself. It was a piece of costume jewelry, not a diamond ring for her left hand. Nevertheless, the possibilities sent energy pulsing through her. She needed to move. As she scooted out from beneath his embrace and slipped from bed, she figured what she should do was face the morning's cold and the overindulgence of last night's dinner by pulling on her gear and going for a run. Instead, she decided to get up and make waffles for Josh. She'd break out the good maple syrup instead of the cheap stuff she ordinarily used. Love language. Maybe neither one was to the point where they'd put it into words. But Caitlin was ready to think that maybe, just maybe, they had a future together. He ate 4 waffles, 3 slices of bacon, and used half the bottle of syrup. Caitlin considered the meal a rousing success. Upon draining his 3rd cup of coffee, he said, "So you mentioned cross-country skiing. Want to go this afternoon? I could use the exercise."
"Me too. I'd love to go skiing with you this afternoon."
Adopting a casual tone, although she didn't feel casual about it at all, she added, "How about you come with me to church and we go after that?" In the process of licking syrup off his thumb, Josh gave her a sharp look.
"Come again?"
"Come to church with me this morning. Sit with me. Afterward, we can go skiing. I'll pack a lunch before we go."
"Caitlin, that's not a good idea. That's about as public a place as you get in Eternity Springs. News that we were together will be all over town before the end of the Altar Society's bake sale."
"I know. That's fine by me. I'm over the whole secrecy thing. It's been fun, but I'm tired of sneaking around. I'm tired of my dad trying to set me up with Boone McBride."
Josh's brow furrowed with a scowl. It had not missed Caitlin's notice that her father's efforts on the Boone front stuck in Josh's craw.
"Will your parents be there?"
he asked. "Yes, they don't miss church when they are in town."
Josh drummed his fingers on the table.
"I don't know. Maybe we should think about this some before we jump off and do it."
"I have thought about it. All we will be saying is that we are dating. It's okay for me to date. I got that privilege on my 16th birthday."
"They made you wait until you were 16?
"Oh, yeah."
Josh rose from his seat and carried his plate to the sink. She could all but see the wheels turning in his head as he began to rinse the dishes and load the dishwasher. She topped off her coffee mug and leaned against the counter, waiting. After almost a full 5 minutes of thought, he said,
"Your dad wouldn't cause a scene in church."
"No, he wouldn't."
"Okay, then. Well?"
He shot a look at her over his shoulder.
"I'll go to church with you this morning, Caitlin. You'd better hurry and get dressed. We should arrive early in plenty of time to say our prayers. I'm afraid we're going to need them."
He was right. This turned out to be her Father's Day to usher. A smile blossomed on his face when she stepped into the church. It quickly died when he saw just who had come with her.
"Good morning, Dad,"
she chimed, pretending she didn't see the tension.
"Good morning, honey."
Mac bent and kissed her chin, then nodded stiffly toward Josh.
"Tarkington?" "Good morning, sir."
Josh's amused smirk didn't help the situation any, but Caitlin knew when to pick her battles. The door opened again behind him, and elderly Mrs. Wilson shuffled inside. Caitlin seized the opportunity. "We'll find our own seats, Dad. You help Mrs. Wilson." Caitlin dashed up the aisle to take a seat a few rows behind her mother. No way would she sit in the path of her father's laser eyes. Reverend Montgomery gave a thought-provoking sermon about modern influences on the season of Advent that struck a chord with Caitlin. She gave Josh a sidelong look and decided that they'd have the gift-giving talk soon. After the sermon, the congregation sung a hymn, and her father and another usher walked up the aisle carrying the offering baskets. When Mac was 2 rows away, Josh reached into his pocket for his wallet. Caitlin saw the 2 men's gazes meet, and then the strangest thing happened. In the process of handing the offering basket from 1 row to the next, Mac dropped it. He didn't fumble it, he simply dropped it. Bills and change and church envelopes went flying everywhere. But the act of dropping the offering wasn't what Caitlin considered strange. It wasn't the first time a basket had been spilled, and it wouldn't be the last. The strange part was the expression that flashed through her father's eyes as his gaze flew to meet her mother's. Her father looked stricken. He looked scared. In that moment, fear rumbled through Caitlin, too.
Shortly before noon the following Tuesday, at the end of a hectic morning, Josh took Penny outside to tend to her physical needs, then saw her settled on a dog bed in his theater room. Caitlin had smiled tenderly at him when he told her that Penny enjoyed the colors and sounds of TV. Then she suggested the Disney Channel. Now, Paw Patrol was a definite favorite. And if Josh sat and watched with his dog for an episode every so often, well, what was wrong with that? Today, Penny would be watching by herself. He hung the Out to Lunch sign on his front door, grabbed his wallet, and headed for the Mocha Moose to pick up the order he'd placed an hour ago. He'd learned an important lesson about life in Eternity Springs over the course of the past 2 days. Anytime business started lagging, all he needed to do in order to goose his sales was to show up to church with a girl. There'd been a near steady stream of people in and out of the shop since he'd opened Monday morning, both regulars and new customers. An amazing number of folks just happened to stop by to purchase a soft drink from the machine he kept in the front office. He had a rush on oil changes and brake fluid checks and tire rotations, all by people who lingered to visit either before or after the service. Every one of his visitors attempted to pump Josh for information about Caitlin. How long had he been seeing her? Was it exclusive? Was it serious? He managed to deflect most of the questions, though Sarah Murphy surely won the persistence prize because she hadn't quit until she wormed out of him the fact that, no, he wasn't dating anyone else. He and Caitlin had definitely gone public with a capital P. It surprised him that he didn't really mind. He arrived at the Mocha Moose to find his order ready and waiting for him.
"I switched out one of the turkey sandwiches for pimento cheese," the proprietor, Wendy Davis, told him. "Caitlin Timberlake is wild about my pimento cheese."
"I don't recall mentioning Caitlin when I ordered."
Wendy rolled her eyes.
"You ordered one turkey with horseradish. There's only one person in town who eats turkey with horseradish, Jax Lancaster. If you're buying this many sandwiches and one of them is for Jax, then you're buying lunch for his whole crew. And Caitlin is at Gingerbread House today because she's meeting the designer. It just makes sense that one of these sandwiches is for her. You and Caitlin have a lunch date."
Small towns. Living in one was a love-hate relationship. But Josh couldn't argue with her logic. She'd gotten it exactly right. He picked up the crate stacked high with bags of sandwiches and sides and headed for the door, saying, "Thanks, Wendy. I'll be sure to tell Caitlin she has you to thank for the pimento cheese."
"Appreciate you. Now you be careful with your hands so full and watch your step on the sidewalk. There's still some icy patches in the shade."
"I will."
"See you Thursday."
"Am I that predictable?"
"Nah. You having a thing for Caitlin was a total surprise. I had you paired with that friend of Chase's from college who visits from time to time."
Josh didn't have a clue as to whom she was talking about. But as he walked the few short blocks to Gingerbread House, he marveled at the power of the Eternity Springs telegraph. It was a minor miracle that he and Caitlin had been so successful in keeping their secret. The topic of secrets brought the incident in church on Sunday back to mind. Caitlin had brooded about it throughout the afternoon they'd spent cross-country skiing up at Stardance River Camp. He hoped she'd learned something from her mother on their shopping spree yesterday that settled her worries. At Gingerbread House, he found Caitlin with a paintbrush in her hand in what would be the 2-year-old's room downstairs.
"Hello, beautiful."
Her face lit up like the town Christmas tree in Davenport Park. She set down her paintbrush and rushed toward him.
"Josh!"
She gave him a one-armed hug, keeping the hand wet with green paint safely away, and kissed him.
"I missed you yesterday."
"I missed you too. How did the shopping extravaganza go?"
She rolled her eyes. "I'll tell you when we are alone. Maybe after I have a glass of wine."
"That bad?"
"Not bad. Frustrating. Now, let's get sandwiches passed out before the crew gets restless. You're their favorite person now, you know. People don't ordinarily spring for lunch."
"I'm trying to butter them up to do some fixes at my place." fixes already? Your place is brand new.
Nothing major. Just a few minor changes I've realized I want after living there a while.
She folded her arms. Don't even begin to think of stealing the crew away from me before I'm finished with them.
Yes, ma'am.
He winked at her, and then together they passed out sandwiches and chips, potato salad and slaw. Caitlin gave him a quick tour of the latest renovations, then they settled into the front porch swing to enjoy their own meal. Josh set it swaying with a push of his foot and sighed with satisfaction.
Beautiful weather, beautiful woman, a roast beef sandwich that's a work of art.
He gave her a quick, hard kiss, then added,
It doesn't get any better than this.
He unwrapped his roast beef and took a bite, a contented man.
We're lucky to be able to sit outside this time of year,
Jax Lancaster said from the porch step where he sat plowing through his turkey sandwich with extra horseradish. His gaze kept drifting toward the house across the street. His wife had called a few minutes ago to say she and their daughter were visiting Harriet, and they would stop by on their way home. We'd better enjoy it while we can. Caitlin licked pimento cheese off her fingers. I'm happy to see the sun again. It's been so dreary the past few days, and I'd have sworn I heard sleet hitting the roof last night.
I heard it too, Jack said. I was up with the baby around 3, and it was pinging against the windows. It was nice to wake up to sunshine this morning. The forecast says, Oh, there's Claire and Juliana. Excuse me.
He rose and strode away toward the pretty redhead who was trying to maneuver a stroller through the front doorway of Harriet's house. He is so over the moon about that baby, Caitlin said, smiling. It's fun to watch. I keep wondering when Chase and Lori are going to take the leap into parenthood. I suspect Chase will be even more giddy about fatherhood than Jax. The topic sent unease slithering up Josh's spine. He quickly pivoted to another subject.
So tell me about the shopping trip. Did your mom give you the third degree?
Yes, and the fourth and the fifth. Of course, I was doing the same thing to her, so we had a bit of a grilling standoff.
You asked her about your dad's reaction to dropping the collection basket?
I did. I actually talked to them both about it. I spoke to Dad when I picked Mom up at their house yesterday morning. I flat out asked him why he looked so disturbed about it. He blew me off, told me I was imagining things, that it was nothing more than a flash of embarrassed regret. When I brought it up to Mom, she did exactly the same thing. Josh took a thoughtful bite of his sandwich and considered swallowing the question hovering on his tongue. The little line of worry between her brows settled it for him, so he said,
I'm aware that I'm probably stepping way out onto a limb here. But isn't it possible they're telling you the truth? The lighting inside the church isn't great on a sunny day, and it rained Sunday morning. It was dark inside St. Stephen's.
I know. Caitlin sighed and slapped his hand when he stole a potato chip off her plate. He shared one of his corn chips.
I suspect if you saw anything, it was embarrassment. Your dad caused a minor scene. He doesn't strike me as the type to be happy about that.
He's not. You could be right, Josh. Maybe I was seeing things. Nevertheless, it was a weird moment. Another in a long list of weird parent moments of late. Maybe it's the whole retirement thing? Chase and I are both a bit baffled by that. He's never suggested that he wanted to hang up his shingle for good.
I think you should take them at their word and let it go.
He gave the swing another push and added,
If you need to fret, do it over the poor choice of paint color you made for the 2-year-old's room.
She went stiff. What? What's wrong with it?
It's green.
Josh smothered a smile. Yes, a lovely shade of green.
It's pea green. Not with an A, but with an E. With a room full of 2-year-olds, don't you think you're going to have all that color you can manage as it is? Why plant suggestions in their heads?
It's not pea green, she chided. It's parakeet green, and it's part of the color palette Sage helped me choose.
He shrugged. Whatever you say.
When she frowned and began digging around in her bag for the notebook that had become her gingerbread house Bible,
He knew he'd managed to distract her from her worries about her parents, which had been his goal. He'd made a mistake by bringing the subject up in the first place. Although he didn't regret shifting the conversation away from babies one bit. "Parakeet green is a fine color," she muttered, as Jack started up the steps carrying his daughter Juliana. At 11 months old, she was a beautiful little butterball who'd taken her first steps last Wednesday. If Jax was over the moon about her, Claire was giddy. Their son Nicholas was the Lancaster who amused Josh. He loved his little sister, he was quick to tell anyone who asked, but she wasn't anywhere near as awesome as his dog. "Hi, Claire," Caitlin said. "I love Juliana's hat. Where did you get it? Do you know if they come in adult sizes? A stocking cap with hound dog ears would be a perfect stocking stuffer for Lori." "Actually, they do come in adult sizes. I stock these hats at Forever Christmas in the doghouse." Nicholas insisted. "I think I have a boxer and a dachshund left." "Perfect. Hold the dachshund for me, would you please? I'll stop by this afternoon to get it." "Speaking of holding, are you going to hog your daughter, Jax, or share?"
"I'll share, for a few minutes anyway."
As Jax handed the baby over to Caitlin, Josh asked, "Claire, would you like a sandwich? We have a few left over, turkey and ham, I think." "No, thanks. I ate with Harriet." They discussed their friend's recovery for a few minutes. Then, at Caitlin's insistence, they all went inside to view and discuss Parakeet Green. To Caitlin's smug satisfaction, Josh was outvoted. The conversation had turned to plans for Christmas when the baby started fussing and Jax got a call from one of his suppliers. Josh met Caitlin's gaze. "Lunch break is over. I need to get back to work. Are we still on for supper?"
"Absolutely. I pulled pork chops out of the freezer before I left home this morning."
"Awesome."
"I'm leaving too," Claire said. "I need to get back to the store and put Jules down for a nap."
She finger-waved to her husband and walked outside with Josh and Caitlin, where she settled Juliana into her stroller and said her goodbyes.
"Thanks for lunch," Caitlin said to Josh, going up on her toes to give him a quick kiss.
"You're very welcome. I'll see you tonight."
"See you tonight. You're going to love my pork chops."
"I already do, babe."
He gave her a teasing wink, stole a quick kiss of his own, and headed toward the shop. He was a few yards behind Claire when a loud crash boomed from inside the house along with the sound of Jax's pain-filled shout. At that point, time slowed to a crawl. Josh saw Claire whirl around, take a step, and land on a patch of ice. Her feet flew out from beneath her, and she fell, losing her grip on the stroller. The stroller began to roll down the sloping driveway toward the street and the approaching car. Oh, God. Josh ran. Seconds ticked by like hours. He ran as hard and as fast as he'd ever run before. Dread filled him. In that place where his nightmares lived, he'd have sworn he heard the freight train roar of a tornado. The stroller rolled downhill and out into the street, in front of the car that showed no signs of stopping. No, God, no, not again, not another child. He lunged toward the stroller handle with his hands outstretched, touched it, and gave it a mighty shove. My damn bad luck strikes again. Pain exploded, and the world went black. Journal entry. Sherman, meet your new neighbor, the new monster on the block. He's Italian. Call him Tormento. Chapter 14. Caitlin stood trembling in shock outside the Eternity Springs Medical Clinic as the air ambulance lifted off the ground. The whop, whop, whop of the helicopter's blades beat like her heart, reverberating through her bones, stirring up a bile of fear and disbelief and helplessness in her stomach. "Here, honey," her mother said. "Let me see your hands." The child in her, accustomed to obeying, lifted her arms. Allie clucked her tongue and murmured soothing words as she used a damp wash rag